Golf Smarter number 166 for February 17, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
A proposed tax on golf and golfers with Bob Bocher.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading adventure number 166 of the Golf Smarter podcast. Today we venture into a couple of topics that I would never have predicted Golf Smarter would go, but these are not normal times. Like many areas of society, golf is an industry that is being greatly affected by the troubled economy. And for today, we have two conversations that can have an impact on you. As the governor of California is trying to find new ways to balance the budget and generate badly needed revenues for the state, there's a proposed tax on golf that, if enacted, would spread like a computer virus all over the country and possibly the world before anyone notices what hit them. Before we get into that conversation with the executive director of the California Alliance for Golf, I want to do a short follow-up to our last episode regarding the 2009 merchandise show. Henry Moore is a Golf Smarter listener who wrote in to let me know that he was on his way to the 2009 golf industry show in New Orleans and wanted to know if we'd be interested in hearing what golf course owners, managers, and superintendents are talking about this year. You've heard us talk many times about how golf is losing players at a faster pace than gaining new ones. Well, this is the venue for those golf executives to discuss those issues. But a little background first. In May of 2008, we featured the Golf Enterprise Management Program for students at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. Henry Moore just graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree from the program and is networking at this event trying to find some work. Welcome to Golf Smarter, Henry.
Thank you, Fred. Pleasure to be here.
Congratulations. You just graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Stout in the Golf Enterprise Management Program that we have talked about on the show in the past, right?
Yep, correct. Thank you.
Well, the reason you and I are speaking is because you wanted to provide a report to all of us that you just went to the Golf Industry Show down in New Orleans. Tell me a little bit about that show and how it's relevant to us.
Well, the Golf Industry Show is kind of a meeting of a lot of the associations regarding the management of golf. Club Managers Association of America, Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, and National Golf Course Owners Association. They meet once a year for this annual conference and provide a lot of educational sessions for the managers, superintendents, and owners of golf courses on how to become more profitable, how to run their business a little bit more effectively. And especially in this time, it's great to have something like that going on. And some of the educational sessions included how to increase pace of play, how to ignite innovation at your golf course, how to maintain a profitable retail environment, and how to, you know, encourage customers to come to your golf courses. So basically to maintain a little bit more of a positive customer service and provide better services to the customers. So,
well, they should be doing that. I got to believe that the superintendents and the owners are having very different discussions. The owners are trying to keep themselves profitable, trying to stay open. Superintendents are trying to keep everything green. Let's focus on what the superintendents. What is your focus? Do you want to be manager, or superintendent, owner? What are you trying to do?
Well, you know, one day hopefully manager, but, you know, maybe even an owner in the distant future. But I'm planning on being a manager of a golf course.
Okay. Well, I'm curious to know about the superintendents, and there's a big issue with the greening of America right now and what people are doing to save energy, conserve water, and that's got to be going in opposite directions in golf courses. What are they talking about?
Well, a few distributors have actually talked about new improved products in terms of new insecticides, new fungicides that are more environmentally friendly. I actually had the opportunity to speak with an individual who is starting a wind power business, and he's targeting golf courses that are in low wind areas, and I guess that's geared to provide a little bit more energy efficiency to their golf facility, which basically would, you know, cut the bottom line of energy costs and hopefully decrease the costs for the customer when they come to the golf course.
Great, great. I love the idea of having different kinds of fertilizer that's not so dangerous, because whenever I see somebody throwing their cigar on the ground when they're about to hit the ball, and then they pick the cigar up and put it in their mouth, it's like, are you kidding me? Do you know what's on the ground there? Do you really want to put that in your mouth? Do you know where that's been? So, good. Well, wind energy would be great. Hopefully, it'll make them save some money, and we could pass on the savings to the golfers. That would be wonderful. How do they propose? I can't imagine why they're talking about pace of play, but it's you know, there's so many. Seems like there's marshals running around golf courses all the time, going, "Hurry up, hurry up." You know, it's, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up. Leave me alone. I'm playing as fast as I can. I keep losing balls. What are other things that are hot on their topics?
Well, increasing, you know, the enjoyment of the golf. Yeah. I think what they were trying to talk about with pace of play was more effective tee time management and, okay. you know, putting people off at different times. They were also talking about a lot of water use, changing the irrigation patterns and that to, you know, kind of decrease the downtime between watering and everything. They had a lot of talk about maintaining budgets with the maintenance staff and with staffs throughout the golf course. They also had, you know, to manage a retail business a little bit more effectively in the golf shop, where it's more beneficial to the customer, so it's not as pricey, or yeah. so they can provide better services. So they have more of a variety of, you know, merchandise instead of having, you know, one particular type of shirt, whether it be the yeah. dry fit or moisture wicking fabric or whatnot. So, they, you know, there's a lot of brainstorming, so to speak. I think a lot of
questions, not many answers. Curious, what is the consensus there on tee time management? I think that's a real interesting topic, because I've been on courses where they'll let out a group every 8 minutes, and you feel like you're being rushed and crowded. Where I've also been on courses that they have 10-minute tee time intervals, and it's a very different atmosphere. What are they talking about these days? Did you get any idea?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to, you know, find out a specific amount of time. But what they were talking about was more effective play, that it wouldn't matter what you had the tee time times at, where it'd be more effective cart path placement, different cart rules, maybe incentives to finish a round of golf in under 4.5 hours. You know, just kind of maybe placing it more on the individual golfer, where they wouldn't have to have those rangers coming around, like you were saying, you know, every 3 holes, saying maybe you could pick up the pace. So it, a lot of kind of empowerment on the golfer's end to give them incentives to maybe increase their round of golf, maybe, you know, decrease that playing time so they wouldn't be holding up the groups behind them, or, you know, allowing the golf course to put more groups in.
You know, I think an incentive to play under 4.5 hours is an amazing idea. Now, think about it. Say you're paying $60, $70 to play a round of golf, and if you get in within 4.5 hours, you get a $10 rebate. You know, it's like, that would make me move a little bit faster. I think, you know, it'd make me crazy, too. It's like, hurry up, we got to get to the clubhouse. But there's got to be a way to check out. Or you know, if you get in under 4.5 hours, you get a discount on a sleeve of balls. Or something, you know, something, I'm sure they're not going to want to give money back, but maybe if there's some incentive to get people to shop in their, you know, in their pro shop, that's a really interesting idea to help move things along. Great.
Oh, definitely.
Great. Henry, thanks so much for your report. Thanks so much for listening, and keep us updated on your job search. We wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you very much, Fred, and it's a pleasure being on here.
Hope you enjoyed that little conversation. It's nice to have our kids out there trying to find work. He feels like one of our kids now, doesn't he? Anyway, our featured guest today is Bob Boucher. He's the executive director of the California Alliance for Golf, and they are the team that is trying to fight this proposed tax in California. Welcome to Golf Smarter, Bob.
Good morning, Fred.
Thank you for joining us. You know, even though this is focused on a California issue right now, we want to make sure the audience is not fooled by this, because every legislature around the world is watching this closely. California has always been in the forefront in many different aspects of society, from culture to politics, and this is no different. And it's of concern to our audience, it's concern to me, and I know it's of concern to you. Can you please let us know what is going on? There's a proposed tax on golf in California coming from the governor's office, correct?
Yes, there is, and it's extremely broad. It doesn't go into any subsets. It's all just about golf. It's up to the Franchise Tax Board ultimately to tax all of golf according to this particular proposal. And all of golf means anything you can think of: green fees, cart rentals, driving range, hitting balls, things that haven't been taxed before, club dues, club initiation fees, anything you can think of related to golf. That means going to a golf tournament event, such as next week at the AT&T. Going back to what you said a minute ago, I do get the impression that this is a much larger issue than California. The Associated Press has been interested in our story. I get interview requests and have given information to media across the country, and last week I was requested to go on Fox Business News live from New York City, and there I was.
Wow.
So people are interested for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah. Explain what the, and from your perspective, I've tried to call a couple different people in the governor's office to get them and come on to either have a conversation with, so the three of us can have a conversation about this, or for them to present their case, and no one's responded. So we have free reign to say whatever we want here. Explain what it is.
To try to come up with their position is a little difficult, but I will do my best to explain this, and please interrupt me when you think I'm going far afield. But something like this, last year, and I'm talking about roughly a year ago, there were some noises about how the state might want to tax some services that they'd never taxed before, and one that they were talking about was golf lessons. Well, it didn't go very far, didn't make any actual proposal, it just went away. Then the next thing that I ever heard about a golf tax was on November 6th, right after the election. The idea there was to put a lame duck session to work on raising revenues. And we were lumped into a proposal that is the same proposal today, lumped in with other other groups, veterinarians, auto repair labor. So if you went, for example, to get your car fixed and you got new parts, of course you always paid sales tax on those, but if this proposal goes through the way it was packaged, you would also pay for the labor that was done on the car repair at a tax rate, a new tax rate that's never existed before.
Wow.
So let's just, and then there was what they call the entertainment tax. That means if you want to go see a sporting event, there's going to be a new tax on that. However, go see a sporting event, there's a tax, but there's not a tax on going to movies. There's not a tax in recreation on any other recreation than golf. So there's no tax on bowling, there's no tax on swimming, there's no tax on tennis, there's no tax on skiing, there's no tax on any other kind of recreation you can think of. How about membership at a gym for exercise purposes? That's not in there.
And these are all phenomenal revenue resources for the state. I mean, you know, you talk about skiing and tennis, although there's free tennis courts all around. There's a lot of private tennis clubs and private gym memberships. And bowling is a cash business. I mean, do we really know how much money they're making at bowling alleys?
I'm not advocating that just because this tax is singled out golf, that it should therefore be broadened out to include every other recreation you could think of, nor do I advocate, for example, that the sales and use tax be broadened to cover a number of services like attorney's fees, accountant's fees, insurance services. I mean, I've heard of these things. I don't propose that, but I do find it curious that this is where it came from. And
right.
when you're talking about broad-based as opposed to industry-specific targeted taxes, well, broad-based would be things like raising the vehicle license fee. That would be across the board, apply to virtually every Californian, and would raise a lot more money. I mean, hugely a lot more money. But the other part of this is what we found to be hard to swallow was no one did any analysis, as far as we can tell, of what the economic impacts would be. How about the loss of jobs? How about the fact that golf is not confined in its effects to just golf courses? How about Palm Springs? Let's suppose you're operating a golf facility in Palm Springs. Why is it there? It might be to support a residential development, but more often than not, it's a public course, it's a resort, it supports a hotel, it supports the local restaurants, it supports all kinds of economic activity that would not flourish without golf. And we did some analysis.
And Monterey area as well, correct?
Monterey area as well. But can you imagine the Coachella Valley? And I just want to go off on this for a minute because mm-hmm. I think some of the statistics are interesting. There are roughly 130 golf courses in the Coachella Valley of roughly 930 golf courses in California.
And let me just clarify that the Coachella Valley is where Palm Springs is.
That's right. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
So that's one of the highest concentration of golf courses in the country. Another place would be like Myrtle Beach. Another place is Monterey Peninsula, except that it's very much smaller than Palm Springs area. So it turns out that 54% of all jobs in the Coachella Valley are linked or related to the golf industry.
Wow.
We would never think that, but it's true. I mean, obviously, they're the people who work in the pro shop and work on the greens and grounds and mow the lawn and all that kind of stuff and do the administrative things. But this is the other related or what we call enabled industries that are linked to golf. And now what you do, let me just follow this along because it goes along with the proposal. If the tax went in as proposed tomorrow, the taxes in the Palm Springs area would be 8.75% on all golf-related items, the new things that have never been taxed before, all the green fees, all the cart rentals, and so on. Now, in Los Angeles, it would be 10.25% because they have some local add-ons. Well, as you can imagine, the golf tax is not popular in Palm Springs. And you can read an editorial from last week in the Desert Sun, which is the major paper in Palm Springs, adamantly opposed to the golf tax. Well, that's true in a lot of places. We're getting that kind of media attention all over the state now. When people finally figured out what this tax is and what it could do and what its effects would be, in the Palm Springs area, it's obvious to the people who live there what the effects would be. Now, if you're somewhere else, it's somebody else's problem. That's the way people treat it. But in Palm Springs, they get it right away.
Wow. Why do you think they're just targeting golf? Is it they think that it's just rich people?
Well, I'm sure that
there's more expendable income?
That's what I would call the major misconception. But I will tell you what the state government has taken as its position for why they picked golf. And I'm now quoting from a newspaper, actually, H.D. Palmer, a Department of Finance spokesman, quote, "The goal was not to single out golf," end quote. "The sole goal was to go to those services already with an existing point of collection for sales tax," end quote. Well, that means cash registers. So what are we talking about here? Is this persuasive? Are you telling me that there are no cash registers at bowling alleys? There are no cash registers on ski slopes. There are no cash registers at a swim and tennis club. Of course there are cash registers. Interestingly enough, there aren't any cash registers when you go to take a golf lesson, and there isn't a golf pro I know of who has a sales tax license or the apparatus for collecting sales tax when giving a golf lesson. Somebody didn't do their homework here. What they did, apparently, is look around and find that there are taxes on golf in some other states. You know, every state has a different tax profile. Some rely on income taxes more heavily. Some rely on sales taxes. Some have no income tax. Some have no sales tax. Some rely more heavily on property tax. It turns out that in California, the rates on sales tax are very high. The rates on income tax are very high. And now we're in trouble, so look around for revenue. Well, that's okay, but don't tell me that, or at least I'm not persuaded by the notion that it's all about cash registers. That just can't be the case. No cash registers at movie theaters? You know, no cash registers when you go to a gym and they're asking you to buy a membership to do exercising? So this is just not very persuasive. And
well, plus your point is well taken when you talk about all the jobs that are golf-related in an area. You know, the movie theater can't claim that. You know, the movie theater is the movie theater. It ends there. But a tourist area like the Monterey Peninsula or Coachella Valley bring in other people who are going to, like you said, talk about restaurants and other services that are provided and hotels and things. You're not going to find that in these kind of places.
I wanted to point out, we have a dedicated website that explains all the issues and why we are opposed to the sales tax on golf. That's called FORE, California, one word, forcalifornia.com. Now, if you go on forcalifornia.com, you can join the coalition against the tax, but you can also become educated on what it is that the issues are from our point of view, why it is we think that this is a bad idea, why we think that they haven't figured out what the consequences are. I'd say there are lots of what I would call unintended consequences of this proposal. And we have economic statistics on forcalifornia.com and on our own website, cagolf.org, which will explain to you what golf contributed to the state's economy in 2006, which is the last year where there's readily available public information. And I'm talking about statistics that we didn't make up. I'm talking about statistics that are kept by public agencies. So we have this study, and it tells you, it asserts that there are 160,000 jobs in this state that are affected by the golf industry. So this is serious stuff. And then other thing that people wouldn't pick off, what is the charitable giving attributable to golf in 1 year? Well, in 2006, it was $324.3 million charitable giving. And as you can imagine, next week is the AT&T tournament here in the Pebble Beach area. That tournament supports local charities and is one of the major supporters of local charities. I mean, there aren't other sources around that are that big. So there's a lot to be messed with here if you start fooling around.
Right. It sounds like they're just going after the low-hanging fruit. But as you're saying, they're not looking at the whole thing. California is clearly in dire straits of money. I mean, it's not just California. It's the country. It's everywhere you go. Money is an issue. There's a crisis going on. Are you opposed to any tax, or are you just saying don't single out golf?
Yeah, I think it's closer to don't single out golf.
Mm-hmm.
It's don't single out golf at this time, under these circumstances, with those effects that you haven't thought of. That's a better way to put it. I think when you said low-lying fruit, that probably is the case. And I'm not saying that we are low-lying fruit, but I'm saying meaning the golf industry, is perceived to be low-lying fruit. Why? No organized opposition. Well, that turns out to be incorrect. Second, push the thought that it's the rich who are paying for this. Well, that's entirely wrong. That's a major misperception. Because if you analyze who plays golf in California, and I think this is there's been no consideration of this whatsoever, there are over 3 million players. Most of them go to driving ranges, go to pitch and putts, go to public courses. There are about 700,000 players who have handicaps, meaning serious enough to playing steadily enough to have handicaps. Of those players, more than half of those are public course players. Now, I've just gotten down to where it's less than 10% that are the private course players, and there are, of course, these resorts that attract tourists from other parts of the country, sometimes within the state, going from one part to another. Well, who's going to get hurt by this? What's really going to hurt is, for example, let's take Griffith Park in Los Angeles, major public park area, has two golf courses, two major golf courses, a big driving range, public facilities, programs, gets tremendous amount of revenue from the people who play there. Then there are the subsidized fees, for example, for seniors. Now, what happens when you introduce a golf tax on top of this? The Parks and Recreation Department has projected that they're going to take a major hit. They're going to lose players, they're going to lose revenue, and they're going to have to swallow this sales tax. Well, if they lose $1 million a year, which they project, as far as I can tell, this is what we are told, they are saying, telling the local media, that they can't afford it, and they're against the tax because it's going to hit other programs. It's going to hit the support of their parks. They won't be able to put the money into swimming pools and to the programs that they have in place. So it's just, these are just the kinds of things that have not been considered.
So your statement is it's just not well thought out.
It's not well thought out, and the impacts are going to be elsewhere. The people who are going to be hurt are the people who don't have the money, not the people who do have the money. Although the people who do have the money are going to not participate to the extent that they previously participated, and that will result in job losses. Mm-hmm. So that's the story.
That's an interesting story. And what is the time frame? Where are we on this? As you and I speak right now, we're at the beginning of February, and people are going to be listening to this. Because it's a podcast, they could be listening to it in March, April, May, or June, and beyond. What is the time frame for movement on this? What has the governor said that he wants to make happen, and when?
Well, I kind of have to give you some history. This proposal was made on November 6th.
2008.
Exactly, 2008. It failed in the lame duck legislature. Then a new legislature took its seats in December of 2008. Since that time, we have organized an opposition. Now, there is a lot of media coverage against this particular tax.
Good.
So, for example, in last week, there were three major editorials in the state that are against the tax. I'm just going to give you the headlines. Governor's idea for taxing golf unfairly targets Valley. Proposed golf tax unfairly targets one sport. Governor's tax, golf tax, doesn't make the cut. And we had another one about a week before that in Sacramento Bee. Very good story, not an editorial, but very much opposed to the golf tax. The first cut on the golf tax was that it was going to become effective, if passed, on February 1. Now it's projected to be effective, if passed, on April 1. So that answers your question, but it could happen any time that the governor, along with the legislative people with whom he's negotiating, and that's the people in the Senate and the people in the Assembly, the Republicans and the Democrats, the leaders, could make a budget deal, and they could get agreement to have this thing be implemented. Or they could leave out the broadening of the sales tax as proposed. I think that's what's going to happen. I hope that's what's going to happen. So you check with me down the road as to what actually happened here in the next couple of months, or it could be in the next week or two. However, let's suppose that this thing goes through without broadening the sales tax. Do I think that this issue will be around later? Sure.
Sure.
I think it'll be out there. And I think we have to present a united front to explain what it is that's at stake, who's against it, why they're against it, what the effects will be. I think we've made tremendous progress since November 6th in getting that message out and in organizing our industry constituents. If this thing is gone for a while and comes back, we'll be even that much more organized, and we'll be that much farther ahead on what our position is with respect to this.
Well, hopefully it's not going to be a situation like cooking pasta where you just throw it against the wall, and if it doesn't stick, you keep cooking it, but you keep throwing it, right? That they keep coming back with more ways of trying to sneak this in.
That's right. Well, you can understand how this might have originated.
Mm-hmm.
After all, this budget deficit came up on them, and it loomed, and it was bad to start with, and it got worse and worse and worse. And this is not to blame anybody for it. It's just the way it is.
Right.
However, it's one thing to recognize a problem, another thing to come up with effective solutions. And the golf tax is really not part of an effective solution.
As a Californian, what can I do?
Well, as I say, the first thing to do is to go onto our website, forecalifornia.com, forecalifornia.com, and that will explain to you how you can support our opposition to the tax, how you can do what we'd like you to do when we'd like you to do it, such as send a message, an email, a letter, a phone call, whatever it is, at whatever time to the right people, to the appropriate legislators. We'll identify that for you. And if you can give us a little money to support this effort, that would be greatly appreciated. As you can imagine, this is not cheap. It takes professional assistance, and I think we're doing a good job with it.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, and we will put links to your website on the Golf Smarter blog. So if you don't remember, speaking to the audience now, if you don't remember the websites that Bob was talking about, don't worry about it. Just go to golfsmarter.com and check out the Golf Smarter blog, and we'll have links that'll take you directly there so you can get active in this issue as well, because it affects all of us.
I have one final comment.
Please.
Of all issues that are out there, this is the one that adversely affects every single element of the golf industry. This is the one that brings them all together. Every player, every facility operator, every supplier to the industry, all the retailers, the people who sell fertilizer, the people who sell golf carts, the people who Rainbird, anybody you can think of is adversely affected by this golf tax because this hurts the industry. So we are mobilizing the industry in a way that it's never been mobilized before, and it's about time. It's a good thing to happen. We're going to have lots of other challenges, as you can imagine, water, other environmental regulation, and we're just trying to present our position as an industry in the most sensible, understandable light possible so that people don't misperceive us like happened with this golf tax, so that they don't act like they're just taxing the rich here and it won't be a problem for anybody. It will be a problem. I think we've made a lot of progress in getting our industry together to tell that story.
Bob Boucher, the Executive Director of the California Alliance for Golf. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your time and exposing this issue.
Thank you, Fred.
Well, my apologies. I think I called them both Boucher and Boucher. I think it's Boucher. Sorry about that, Bob, but thanks for joining us again to get more information about For California and this issue that may just sneak by us. Check out the links in the Golf Smarter blog at golfsmarter.com. This is a good time to bring up the blog again since it's been a while since we've talked about it. Not only can you get an overview of what each episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is about, Find specific episodes by keywords and listen to the shows while sitting at your computer. The main reason I advise you to check out the Golf Smarter blog on a regular basis is the interactive aspect of the podcast. Engagement is so important to me. This is our show. And as of this recording, there are a couple of different blog posts announcing recording times for upcoming interviews with links to the websites or articles on each guest. I put these there because I really would like to know what you'd like to ask these people if given the chance. Please don't leave it up to me. Just a hint. Right now we've got a couple of putting instructors, a fitness expert who used to play professional football, and a golf school operator who's actually going to be interviewed just minutes after I publish this episode. But I'm keeping you updated on the blog. I hope that you can join in and check out what's going on. Now, talking about the interactivity aspect of it all, here's a reminder to join our Golf Smarter group at Facebook.com. We've got hundreds of members now asking and answering each other's questions. And just this week, I posted a question about goofy superstitions. PGA Tour player and AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am 2009 dropout Aaron Oberholzer was quoted in the San Francisco Chronicle last week in using a quarter in a specific manner as his ball marker. Personally, I like to use the lowest denomination of coins from different countries, as long as they have a one on them, to remind me of one putt. What about you? Join the conversation at Facebook.com. It's the Golf Smarter Group. Times are tough, and you may have noticed a reduced output from our network of programs so far this year. And even though we've hit a bump in the podcast road, I am determined to continue because of our relationship. Let me promise you that I am working tirelessly to come up with different ways to continue producing this Golf Smarter podcast, find new and better prizes, get you discounts, talk to fascinating people who can lower your scores, and hopefully this year we're going to play golf together. So please continue to listen, tell your friends, provide me with feedback, and post your honest reviews on iTunes. Now we close today's show with a quote submitted by Chris Coughlin. There are two things you can learn from stopping your backswing at the top and checking the position of your hands. How many hands you have, and which one is wearing the glove. Next week, we'll share that conversation that I had with Aaron Oberholzer at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am press conference. He made it to that, but not the event itself. If you have any comments, quotes, suggestions, or questions, send me an email by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.